He belongs to the Torah Carta International Organization, the Jews Against Zionism and Their Atrocities. He's famous worldwide, traveling all over the world and protesting against the oppression and atrocities committed by the Zionists. And as a matter of fact, Muslims and Islam is just one of the atrocities that the Zionists are committing, and one of the victims of their atrocities are Muslims and Islam. In addition to that, we find that the Jewish community themselves and the Christian community are also suffering from the atrocities of the Sahyuni Zionist people. So our respectable guest is one of those personalities, one of those few human beings of conscience and reason that condemns the oppression and condemns the atrocities committed by those criminals of the Zionism philosophy. So I don't take more time. We welcome him. I thank you very much for coming and blessing us with your presence. Please welcome the holy, respectable Rabbi Weiss with a loud salawat. There's a approximately three minute video clip. I would like to draw your attention before he starts his speech to please watch this 3 minute video clip from Ustad Ayatullah al-Uzma, Shaheed Mutahhari, rahmatullahi alayh, about the Day of Quds.
اگر پیغمبر اسلام زنده بود امروز چه می‌کرد؟ درباره چه مسئله‌ای می‌اندیشید پیغمبر اکبر؟ والله بالله ما در برابر این قضیه مسئولیت داریم، به خدا قسم مسئولیت داریم، به خدا قسم ما قادر هستیم. والله قضیه ای که در پیغمبر اکرم رو امروز خون کرده است، این قضیه داستانی که در حسین ابن علی رو خون دارد، این قضیه که حسین ابن علی بود بابا، اگر میخواستی از من عزاداری بکنی، برای من سینه بزنی، برای من زنجیر بذاری، شعار امروز تو باید شده این باشد دستور 1300 سال پیش مرد رفت سمر امروز کمشنام امروز با در دیوار این شهر برای شعار فلسطین باید سکن بخور اما تلاش ما مسلمین در این زمین چی بوده تو خدا خجالت داره که ما خودمون مسلمون خجالت داره ما خودمون شیعه علی ابن ابی طالب بخونیم خدا قسم من شنیدم دشمن چنین اهانتی کرده است آمده سرزمین مسلمین را غارت کرده است مردانش رو کشته است، اسیر کرده است، متعرض زنان اونها شده است، زیورها را از گوش زنها، از دست زنهای اونها جدا کرده است. در همین علی ابن ابی طالب که ما اظهارش تشیعش میکنیم و یه حساسیتهای بیمعنی و دروغی نشان میدیم، یک مرد مسلمان با شنیدن این خبر زیغ کند و بمیرد، سزاوار است مورد ملامت. آیا اینها مسلمان نیستند؟ اونها عزیزان ندارن؟ چیه در دنیا که امروز منکر میشه و فلسطینی های آواره حق ندارن که قتل خودی منکر یفن. های قرآن بخورید: الذین آمنوا و هاجروا و جاهدوا فی سبیل الله به اموالهم و انفسهم و با مال که بدونیم کمک بکنید. والله واجب است، مثل نماز خوندن واجب است، مثل روزه گرفتن واجب است، این انفاق واجب است. اولین سؤالی که بعد از مردن از ما بکنن همین است: پدر سیدی، همبستگی اسلامی چه کرد؟ پیغمبر فرمود: من سمع مسلما فرادی لا یال المسلمین ولم یجبه فلیس بمسلم. یعنی گفت هر کس که بشنود صدای مسلمانی که او فریاد میکند یا للمسلمین، یعنی مسلمانان به فریاد من برسید و نرود او را کمک نکند، او دیگه مسلمان نیست، من او را مسلمان
I pray to the Almighty that He bestows upon me His truth, His wisdom, and that I should be worthy of conveying this truth and this godly knowledge to this special gathering, and in so doing we should be able to sanctify His name. Amen. Amen. Assalamu alaikum to all of you. Assalamu alaikum. And this is already my second time that I had the privilege, the honor of meeting the Imam and coming to your mosque, Meshe. And it's for me a great privilege, and I'm overjoyed that I've been asked to come again. Then it seems that I'm a welcome guest, and I really appreciate that. It's joyful always to see children amongst the crowd, because this is, with God's help, inshallah, the future leaders. And joyful, happy faces. Thank you for giving your time, all of you. Everybody's time is precious. And to take time out of a person's busy schedule to listen to something that, from its communities, that there is a rift, unfortunately, today, and to give of your precious time to hear and to listen, is really applauded, something to be applauded, and I'm very thankful. And I hope, with God's help, that it will be worthy, it will be worth your time and effort. Today, the world, unfortunately, is full of animosity, of hate, and full of, unfortunately, there is full of Nakba, there's crime, there's criminality, destruction, as we just seen this touching little clip. And of course, this is only a very glossed over little clip, because I mean, there's what the eyes behold. If you go to Palestine, you go to Gaza, and it's unbelievable that the world allows this. And there's very good reason, unfortunately, for the animosity and the rift between people. I just spoke about this terrible Nakba, this tragedy. I was just, it passed my mind that I have to also express, I was just discussing with the Imam, today we were discussing the terrible tragedy of what's happening today, from the Almighty sent the tragedy in Pakistan, that the terrible flood, And we pray for all the people of Pakistan, amongst the other around the world who are suffering so many different tragedies. By us, it's the coming of the new year. We call it the Rosh Hashanah, the coming of the new year. That God should bless this coming year. People should have peace and tranquility and prosperity, which us in America, we know it affects us. And it should be good for all. And the day should come that with constant prayers by us, Rosh Hashanah, our yearly high holiday prayers, is about one thing only, and that is the revelation of the Almighty. That's in our prayers constantly. If somebody looks at the Jewish prayer on the high holiday, the central prayer is, we say it at night, in the morning, the day, by every single prayer, it's about the revelation of the Almighty, that people should accept God's glory. And we hope that this year will bring that about. We hope even this week before this, the beginning of the year, that it should be bring true peace and what I'll be talking about, the dismantlement of this unjust occupation of Palestine. The reason for the animosity that has been created between the Jewish people and the Muslim people is simply nothing to do with religion. It has to do with a man-made tragedy, a tragedy that started a little over 100 years ago. It is something that people call Judaism, maybe, and they refer to as the Jewish nation and so forth, meaning the state of Israel. And people believe that this is what Judaism is. It's part of Judaism, a fulfillment of some Jewish hope, some Jewish yearning, what Jews were praying for or something. And they constantly equate and put together Judaism and the state of Israel, or the ideology behind the state of Israel, which is called Zionism. Like America, United States, the ideology, it's built on an ideology which is supposed to be freedom of religion, democracy, and people are constantly fighting about I don't mean physically fighting, I mean by civil war it was physical, but constitutes democracy and how it's to be spelled out with all the different things that are constantly happening. Israel is born on an ideology and called Zionism. And Zion means Jerusalem, referred to in the books of the prophets, the city of David actually, which people refer to as Jerusalem. What I'm sure all of you know as Kutz. So people again use this word Zionism, being that it was referred to in the prophecies, not Zionism, but Zion was in the Tzion in the prophecies, but the Zionism is this movement. So it seems to be built and predicated on something Jewish, again, on something of the religion. And of course, the state of Israel uses its symbol, the Star of David, and everything else. They have a menorah, I don't know, like the symbol, they have a menorah is like a candelabra thing. Everything to do that comes from the religion. Therefore, which is actually in what they wanted, is that you should believe that this represents the Jewish people and this is the will of the Jewish people around the world. And this has brought about, of course, this distancing and the rift that was driven between the Jewish people and the Muslim people around the world. In truth, though, Zionism and Judaism is the furthest possible, one of my teachers always says, it's further than night is from day. The difference is Zionism is from Judaism. It's not only there's a differentiation between, but it's contradictory, totally contradictory. Judaism is a religion. Judaism is spirituality, to serve God. It is not built on a piece of land. It is not built on anything physical or material. On the contrary, it's what a person is supposed to elevate himself to be connected with something that's higher than physical. It's spiritual, to serve God. Judaism tells us that we have to emulate God. We say in our statements, in our words of the scholars, in the Talmud, in the different Medrash, whatever it says, Mahu rachum af atatei rachum. Just as God is compassionate, you must be compassionate. We have to emulate God. When somebody is a very holy man, he's called godly. And that's what it's all about. That's what Judaism is. Zionism is a transformation from godliness, from spirituality, into materialism. It's transforming the whole concept of what it means to be a Jew from metaphysical, everything spiritual connected to God, into a simple physical want, a political nationalistic goal. A political goal to have a piece of land, have a strong army, whatever a nation needs to become proud and famous and strong is what Zionism is. They want a piece of land, an Olympic team that you win gold medals, and anything else that goes along with this issue of a state, totally physical, material, and in actuality, in the essence of Zionism, is the removing God from the equation, putting God aside. Now, part of nationalism is to be able to tell the world, at least, that they have the freedom to practice religion. So you can be a practicing Jew, and they'll say that they even promote it, or they'll say that they even promote the people who want to practice Islam and Christianity. So they'll allow religion, they say. But in essence, it's totally a non-religious movement. It's really taking God out of the equation. But it's much more than that. Because Zionism was created by people who were from the Jewish religion, and they had left the Jewish religion, the practice of Judaism. Most of them were people who detested the religion. I have statements. This was just, I had just put this together. We have put together from the leaders. I don't know if people here are aware of how much you're educated, and it's not bad not to be educated in the except to know your enemy. But let's say Theodor Herzl was the father of the state of the concept of creating a state, and Theodor Herzl wrote in his own diary, I believe it's on page 14. And it's here, let me just see. Well, I have it actually in here, the same thing, but I'll tell you word for word what he has said. He wrote that in order to be able to attain freedom, he said, in order to be able to stop anti-Semitism is by gathering all the people of Austria. Oh, here it is, okay. So I'm apologizing because I have my other old edition was in tatters. So now they just, right before I came here, they put together a whole thing printed up for me in a nice format. So here it is. The way to solve the problem of anti-Semitism is to speak to the head priest of Vienna. He lived in Austria, in Vienna, Theodor Herzl. He was a reporter, an editor of a paper. So he wrote, the way to solve the problem of anti-Semitism is to speak to the head priest of Vienna to get an appointment with the Pope and to make a mass conversion of all the Jews of Austria to Catholicism. That is the way to solve the problem that we are oppressed of anti-Semitism. So the way is to make a mass conversion, all of the Jews, to Catholicism. It should be done on a Sunday, in the middle of the day, with music and pride, publicly. He wasn't just writing like a passing thought. He went through this, that it should be done pride, music, in the middle, on a Sunday, that everybody should see. We are the last generation that held on to the faith of our forefathers. And the conversion would be in St. Stephen's Cathedral. That's the big cathedral over there. In other words, he was thinking about this, and it should be done to show the world that they're dropping their religion. It is understood, this is in his diary, his own diary, and nobody refutes it. You can look it up, it's page 14. He wrote, "It is understood that I have to remember to disregard, to discard negative Jewish things like the Yiddish language and observing the mitzvot, the commandments." Crazy things, you know, you'd think this is, why would he write it even? You know, a person should be embarrassed to write such things. And yet he wrote it, and this was accepted by all his colleagues. He says, "Anti-Semites shall be our best friends," he wrote, "because they will assist us," in other words, "of having persecution of Jews. Therefore, the Jews will move up out of the countries where they are." So they wanted to induce and create, it is essential that the suffering of Jews becomes worse. This will assist in realization of our plan. They wanted, if they create anti-Semitism, then the Jews will go up to Palestine. So this was one of the major plans, and actually, which I doubt I'll be getting into in depth, but there is a book called 51 Documents from Leni Brenner. They said we have to burn under the feet of the Jews in order that they should be driven out of their countries, and therefore they will go up to Palestine. That's where they'll be able to build, they'll have cannon fodder, build up their state. And to make sure that you think it wasn't just theories, I mean, the fact that he was non-religious is very well known, and it's not refuted by any Zionist, the fact that he himself had one son, and his name was Hans, and he wrote in the newspaper very proudly that he is not circumcising his son, and he never circumcised his son, which is the covenant between Jewish people and God that we made, as you all know, in the Torah it says about Abraham, of course, Bris Milah. This is something that he proudly announced he's not going to do, and he never did. So that's just giving the, this is the father of it. And I don't want to bore you with all of these things, but I'll just mention two or three other heads that I'm sure you all know of, maybe. There was Zev Jabotinsky. He was, Menachem Begin was one of the prime ministers, one of these gangsters, a terrorist. What the, if they're looking for terrorism, this is where you should look. This was the father of terrorism, these people. And he wrote, he was the mentor of Menachem Begin, Zev Jabotinsky, and he wrote in an article in the paper called Chadashos Haaretz, that's the news of the land, and an article was called Outside the Camp, in 1919, he wrote, "In the national home, we will announce that those Jews who have," in other words, they want to create, remember, this was before, this was in 1919, right at the beginning of the Zionism, so when they wanted to create a state. So in the planning that they had, they wrote, "In the national home, we will announce that those Jews who have on themselves the rust of exile, and they refuse to shave off their beards and their earlocks," Payas, he wrote, actually, Payas, "will be second-class citizens and will not have the right to vote." So if a Nazi would write it, that you would understand. And if I would say this was written by Hitler, it would fit right in, and you would understand that. Or today, if you would say this was written by Ahmadinejad or by, you know, something, then you would say, yeah, that's right, that's what they, all the Arabs and the Muslims and everybody has to say about that. No, this was written by Zev Jabotinsky, one of the mentors and somebody who's respected and looked up upon and considered heroes. These are the heroes of the Zionist movement. Shukran, thank you very much. There's much more, but I'm not going to get it right now into all of these things with God's help. Maybe time will allow. But we just want to show, this is the difference between what was Zionism? Zionism were these people who were disgusted with themselves because they were looked down upon amongst the elite. They were in Germany, Austria, and they wanted to be looked up to. And they disregarded and they loathed their religion, and they decided it was built on much more than that, on a heresy, on a rebellion against God, and built rooted really in atheism. In other words, they refuted that God rules the world. We know that everything that happens good to a person and bad to a person, God forbid, whatever, is from God. But these people refuted all of that. So they refuted that anything that's happening to them is connected with their actions and how they conform to the service of God, how they're, you know, relating to God, if they're good, if they're evil, if they're sinning, or they're committing good deeds. So they just looked at their presence and the fact that we don't have a land as something because they're physical, something physically weak. I'm trying to explain the thought process, but really, in the very religious Jewish communities, we say simply, these people were driven by the Satan. And that's what it is. It's built by the Satan. Its success is driven by the Satan. And we know that if you study religion, we know that, you know, God gives in order to fool people, that they should, this world is a test to do good or to do bad. And we have, and there's constantly the Satan working to try to fool a person to do bad. So Satan drives, has driven, and God lets him be successful. The creation of the state of Israel was ratified by the United Nations. All the nations together ratified, except a few that, you know, abstained and didn't vote. But they ratified the acceptance that there should be placed the state of Israel. That was totally illogical. It doesn't make sense. It's in a land that's occupied by the majority of people who are Muslim over there, living there hundreds and hundreds of years, and it was ratified that they should make what they call the Jewish state, that they should be the rulers over this piece of land, even though they're a minority, and the whole United Nations was created just prior to that in order to bring freedom and human rights to people. And here they go, one of the first things they do, and they create a state that ignores what's the inhabitants of this land, and it goes through, it's ratified, and they should, and it's going on, and there's over 60 years now, we're having they keep on issuing statements for the Palestinian people and so forth, and it's just good to decorate, you know, the walls with, you know, there's nothing, you know, all the different statements that were put out, nothing, you know, that the Palestinian people shouldn't have to suffer and so forth. It means nothing. They've ratified it, and it continues from the United Nations. So we say, how did this come about? So we say it's the works of Satan, this happening of the state of Israel. And the same thing, so I'm trying to explain the mindset, is simply, it could defy logic. It's something which is totally wrong, and yet it exists. But what's pushing these people, the fathers and the shakers and movers of the Zionism and the creators of the state of the people of Israel, the state of Israel, were people who openly threw away the religion, hated the religion, disregarded the religion, and they wanted one thing, they wanted nationalism, erzatz, a transformation, and Judaism should be something else entirely, from not spiritual, not connected to God, but a piece of land. Now, we always say, you wanted to leave the religion, go, leave. You know, assimilate. Like the people, in fact, many of these people were children and grandchildren of Jews who had dropped their religion, assimilated. They moved into society. They went to Germany. They became cultured and so forth. What are you pushing? Why do you have to call it a Jewish state? Why do you have to give it all these Jewish symbols? And the reason for that is two reasons. We say, again, it's the Satan that's testing the Jewish people that have given to them that they should be, unfortunately, confused, and the people should follow and give support to this movement. But in their minds, the reason they did this was not because Satan in their eyes. In their eyes, they had a plan. They knew that if they'll come in the name of religion, then the world at large will support them. And it's very simple, because the people of the world, they knew the evangelistic Christians support that the Jewish people should have a homeland, that the Jews should go up to Palestine. They knew that, again, the Jewish people around the world are very ignorant of the religion. Unfortunately, the majority of Jews are not religious. So they knew they know that every Jew prays and knows that their grandparents prayed and said, God, we want to return to Jerusalem. We pray that. Every Jew, in fact, even non-religious Jews come together once a year for Passover. Maybe you've heard of Passover, the Pesach. And everybody, even the least knowledgeable of the Judaism, they come together and they have a feast. It doesn't even have to be kosher, unfortunately, to them. You know, they don't know the laws, they don't know anything. They drive there, they're not allowed to drive on the Passover. They come, they sit down by this meal. But they know one thing, at the end of the meal they say, the coming year in Jerusalem. That's a statement that we say at the end of the meal, the coming year in Jerusalem. But to us, a religious person, it has nothing to do whatsoever with going up to Jerusalem right now. It has nothing to do with that. Because if that would be the case, we have religious Jews
who give money, tens of thousands of dollars every year for their children's education. We have large families, thank God, in the very religious communities that have 10 children and more, and they pay it for each child. You have to pay, you know what it means to pay astronomical fees. They send them all to private schools. They can't buy tickets and go up to Jerusalem. They have to say the coming year in Jerusalem. It's ridiculous. But the point is, it's not what it means the coming year in Jerusalem. The coming year in Jerusalem, what a Jewish person prays for these thousands of years, is the revelation of godliness. Because we in the Jewish belief believe that there will come a day when God will make a metaphysical change in the world, that the whole world one day will wake up and believe in God, and everybody together will serve God in harmony. That is what it says in our high holiday prayers. We say it in everyday prayers. The beginning of our prayers start with that. The end of the prayer say the day should come when all humanity will recognize God. So when we say the coming year in Jerusalem, because we believe, this is the Jewish belief, that God will rebuild a temple out of fire, in other words, a spiritual thing, and all the world will come up and serve him. It won't be through us. We're not going to go and build this temple. It's going to be from God himself. And all the world will go up and serve him. So we pray and yearn for that day. In fact, every human being is required, according to Judaism, to work to serve God. In other words, to try to elevate himself, be good, not sin. And that's the reason of your life. And our purpose in life is to either sanctify God. We always thought that it's what you're doing is a kiddush Hashem, we call it sanctifying of God. On the flip side, you shouldn't, God forbid, desecrate God's name. That's the worst thing. We tell a child, if you steal something in a store, you're making a chilul Hashem. You're not allowed to steal, and you're desecrating God's name. So we know desecration of God's name is the worst thing by us, and sanctifying is the greatest thing. And that's what our life is all about. It revolves against it. And the greatest of sanctification of God's name is when the whole world will recognize one God. That's what we hope for and pray for. And that's what we look forward to going back to Jerusalem, not to build a piece of land. And we believe that this will come about with a metaphysical change, not with guys going to come with guns, or something like that. That's ridiculous, because that's not what it's all about. It's from God. It's a spiritual happening. This was Judaism. Zionism comes along, and they said, the reason what we've suffered along, because we weren't physically strong. They ignore everything of the Torah, of God, and everything, saying, because the temple was destroyed, and all the words of the prophecies, where it says, because we've sinned, we were punished, they ignore that. They said, because we were physically wrong, we didn't have an army, we didn't have a strong army. If we would have a strong army, now we'll be able to go back. And they make everything that had to do with the religion, they make pictures of militants. And I don't, again, it's not for now because it's too complicated, but they have the Maccabees. They have the Olympic team, it's called Maccabees. They have many things Maccabees. They make Maccabees like militants. In the time of the Romans, the ones who fought for the Jewish people by the destruction of the temple, and they had, and they was, in times of the Greeks, were called the Maccabees. Maccabees is, in Hebrew, it's four letters. Maccabee, Mem, Chof, Beis, Yud. And that means the sons of the high priest in the temple. There was a temple, and there was a high priest. That means the leading priest, and he had five children. And these children, the Jews paid taxes for many years to the Greeks. It was under Greek rule, and the Jews did not complain. They did what they paid their taxes and so forth. But then one day came the Greeks, and they gave out a decree that nobody's allowed to keep the Sabbath or make circumcision. They'll be killed if they will do that. So then the Jewish people said that we can't do it. People died for that. They gave their lives for that. Because the law is that we have to obey. Every Jewish person has to obey the country that you're in, the rules and the laws of the country. But if they come along and they say that you shouldn't serve God, then we're not allowed to obey them. So the Jewish people till then were paying the taxes and they accepted it. But then they came and they said you can't keep the Sabbath and circumcision. So the five children of the high priest went out and decided to go out and fight against the whole Roman, the Greek army, the Greek army that was there. Now we're talking about tens of thousands of people with elephants they had. It was impossible, they wore armor. It was impossible for them to win. And chances are they were old people. The high priest's children, we're not talking about young soldiers. And they went out and they didn't have guns like we have, today. Not we have, but unfortunately. They had shields and swords, and they had on the shield, they wrote on it, Mi kamocha be'el Mashiach, who is like you amongst the powerful ones, God. In other words, who's like God? So they were referred to Maccabees. They were called Maccabees. and they won. God made a miracle and they defeated the Greeks. And they went into the temple, and the temple was, they couldn't find oil to make to light the menorah. The menorah is the candelabra. So God made a miracle, and they found hidden one bottle of oil that was pure. It had to be a special purity. Again, I'm not going to get into how the purity works, but it was a pure bottle of oil, and it burned for 8 days. And until they were able to get more oil, by the 8th day they had more oil. And they celebrate the holiday of lights, it's called, and we have the menorah. Now, Zionism takes the Maccabees as a symbol of warriors, and you know their symbol for the Olympic team. And who are these Maccabees? People who are holy people, and their whole issue was nothing military. We celebrate the holiday of lights, the defeat of the Greeks, lighting the candelabra, we don't even celebrate only on a very as a by issue. The defeat, you know, the military defeat, because our issue was the lighting of the candelabra that was it's called the Holiday of Lights. And so the military issue is what the issue is, and it wouldn't have been possible if they would have been an army to defeat the Greeks, because the Greeks were a very powerful army. It was five people. How could they defeat an army? It was a miracle from God, because they went to fight for God's issue. But the Zionists take themselves as a symbol, the Maccabees. They always have a symbol of, if you ever see like a stone, like a carving of a man with a sword, they show the signs of the Maccabees. So this is their symbol, and because they're trying to bring the whole concept of the Torah into their army. Like, we're an army against many, many thousands of Arab countries, and we're going to defeat them, and then the continuation of this Jewish concept. Well, in truth, these people, they know themselves the heretics, and it's rooted in blasphemy. The whole concept is to say, God, we don't wait for your redemption. We don't believe in what you say. Our suffering is because we're physically weak, and if we'll be physically strong, we'll get out of this problem. What's the problem? What is the problem that you're trying to get out of? We know the problem is because we're not serving God properly, so we're in exile, and eventually God will, as I say, bring the end of exile, which we believe is when the world will recognize one God. By then, what's their problem? Because they don't have a land. It's a totally different problem. It has nothing to do with the Jewish thing. And therefore, they're saying their solution is to take up and to have a military, a strong army, and recreate a land. It won't even help us. You can't shoot yourself out of a spiritual thing. In other words, creating the land isn't the solution to our problem. Our problem is our removal from God, that we're not close to God. Our solution is Lashon HaBa B'Yerushalayim, the coming year in Jerusalem. In other words, the closeness to God. So we teach our children, you have to study, you have to learn to serve God and be close to God. That is what the solution is. That is the only solution. When the solution is proper, then God will, change the world around, we believe. When God sees the world as fit, we will have... Their solution is to create a state. Because they have a whole different problem. They have nothing to do with it. Their problem is they don't have a land. Now, as I said, their concept was not only to create a land. Their concept was, we believe that Satan drove them. They wanted to remove from all the Jewish hearts their connection to God. Because they could have just left and become non-religious Jews. They were non-religious, but they could have just joined society. Why did they insist? Why didn't they just assimilate and become part of German culture? No, they insisted they have to create a state and call it the Jewish state and recreate their own thing. There's no reason for it, except we say it was driven by the Satan. But that's what they decided to do. They're going to make a new type of Judaism. And they gave it the Jewish symbols because they knew that this way they'll be able to get support from around the world, from the Jewish communities. But not only from the Jewish communities, they'll be able to get support from the Christian world, mostly evangelistic Christians, and they'll be able to tell the world, we're nothing wrong with us. We are, very righteous people, and we're simply returning to the land that was given to us by God. So they waved the Bible as a deed to the land. It's our land. God gave it to us. We're just a continuation of the Maccabees. We're just doing our thing. We're doing what's required of us. And whoever doesn't want us to do it, it's because they're thieves. They've stolen the land from us. They've taken the land from us. And, it's rightfully ours. We're only simply coming back to our land. This is all a farce. The Jewish community, there was a religious community living in Palestine for hundreds and hundreds of years. There were Jewish communities living in Iraq, in Iran, in Egypt, and in Pakistan, in every single Muslim lands that there were, and there was no problem of the coexistence. We never had a religious. We were thriving as a religious communities in all these lands. They were very religious until today. You can look at the history of that land. You can see that we lived there, and there was no United Nations or human rights groups to protect us. And the communities protected the Jewish people. They let them practice their religion, and they grew and they thrived, and they were never slaughtered. I'm not saying there was never any problem. In every time, unfortunately, there were problems. But as a general rule, the Jews thrived in these countries. Not only that, when they were being persecuted, let's say by the Inquisition, by the Spanish Inquisition, they had the Crusades. Both the Muslims and the Jews were terribly persecuted. The Jews were slaughtered in the hundreds of thousands. The Crusades marched through the lands and just slaughtered the Jews. But not only that, they took them, and in Portugal, in Spain, they confiscated everything the Jews had, and they forced them to either to convert to Christianity or they burnt them. They tortured them. You can still go there and see they had, I don't know what you would describe, they had with like iron nails and whatever, they tortured them. It's unbelievable torture that they had to convert. So the Jews who were able to escape to Muslim countries, they went to Turkey, they went to, all the Muslim countries, and that's where they found a safe haven. And so why? Because these countries accepted and embraced that the Jewish people could come serve them. So it was never a religious conflict. Do we have a difference in religion? Yes, we have a difference in religion. But does that we serve one God? But we have a different approaches. Was this the reason for a conflict or a rift? No, it wasn't. On the contrary, it was the greatest respect given from one to the other. That's clear. And people today, and I always urge, I mentioned to the Imam today, that I always urge, and we beg people from the older people in the community, you should sit down and say, do you remember the Jewish communities where you lived in Egypt, wherever it was? Do you remember? And they say, yeah, I remember. Can you describe how you lived together? Because people still today, bear testimony to how they coexisted and how they helped each other. The Jewish people helped the Muslim helped the Jewish people, and they coexisted. And people don't remember that. People don't know that. They think that there was always a hate, and even when the Jews lived there, there was a hate between the two. That's despicable. That's something which is terrible. And we have to set it right. So it's important to at least record it. Let them speak to record or write it if they can. And we should record this. And with God's help, it should be advertised. Articles, papers don't want to take articles about this in the mainstream newspapers. But we should record it. And eventually, it has to be the American and the Western civilization should be informed about all of this. Why? Because it affects. Again, I keep on referring to that. We had a very beautiful conversation today, the Imam and I, we were discussing that the world it's one of the tragedies of Zionism is that the world, how it affects the world, it affects even in other issues, because the world looks at the Muslim society, the Muslim as people who simply cannot coexist with other people, not only with Jews, but with other people. And you all know that, unfortunately. That's the way it's portrayed. And a lot of it comes because they've heard over 60 years that the Muslim people and the people in Palestine and other countries around it hate the Jews. And that's tragic because it affects the coexistence of Muslims in the United States, even when it has nothing to do with Jewish people. So if it would be written in the newspapers, the history, it would be written, of course, it would ideally by Jewish people should write it, writing about how they coexisted together in harmony. This history would change the mindset of the people. And that's unfortunate that it's not there. That people don't know this. But at least we should record it. But anyway, basically, in the Torah, it's required of us, as a Jewish person, to be thankful, to show gratitude for the good that's done to us. And the hundreds and hundreds of years of the Jewish existence in the Muslim and Arab countries, we are required to show our gratitude for that. And Jews, as I say, thrived and they found a safe haven. Even by World War II, Jews escaped to Muslim countries. And Iran just put out actually a movie not too long ago. Maybe you've heard about how they saved thousands, tens of thousands of Jews. And the world doesn't even, it should be translated, it should be shown in America, but it's not shown in America, but it should be shown. And Jews escaped to Turkey and all the other lands. And by World War II, people told us that they escaped there. You know, I know people from our communities. This is part of the truth, that this is not a religious conflict. It has nothing to do with religion. But Zionism came, and in order to be able to gain their legitimacy, they claim that they are inheriting the land, and they're going back to the land that was belonged to the Jews and given by God, and the Arabs and the Muslims don't want the Jews to live there because they hate the Jews. As I say, this is totally false, and it has nothing to do with facts. That is the reason why Zionism took the Star of David and the name of Israel, because they want to legitimize what they're doing. If they would just say, we decided to create a national home, so people would say to you, excuse me, even if it in fact affects one person's house, one person's home, or a few people, and it's certainly a community, they will say, well, you can't just create a national home because you want to if it's going to affect another community. So they, in order to be able to legitimize and to give it an aura of respectability and correctness, they say, these people are actually interlopers. They've just come here, not belong here, and they're just like vagabonds. You know, vagabonds means like, you know, people who just roaming around. They don't really, it's actually a land without a people. If you maybe heard, the beginning was one of the Zionist mantras. It's a land without a people for a people without a land. Why people without a land? Because especially after World War II, the Jews, after they suffered by Hitler, and so there was like a very strong feeling of guilt around the world that they were silent for 6 years or whatever it was, 5-6 years that the Jews were being slaughtered, and the Germans made a big issue of it that they let one ship go out, and it traveled from land to land, and nobody allowed the ship in with Jewish refugees in it. So and so then afterwards there was many countries that felt guilty about this. So the Zionists used this guilt feeling that they said, you see, now we have a land and you have to help us have this land for the Jewish people. So they're building on the guilt of others that they should support Zionism. And what is Zionism? The representation of Jewish people, the Jewish land. It's the Jewish state, they call it, the Jewish state. Now again, therefore, I want, so that's just to bring the introduction here, and I'm going to soon finish, because Zionism and Judaism in actuality forbids us to have a state. As I said, Judaism is spirituality. Zionism is this national movement. It's rooted in saying that God doesn't protect us. God is not here to protect us. We have to take guns in our hands to protect ourselves. That alone is blasphemy. Because any person who believes in God knows it's in the hands of God to protect us. You don't say God's not here. They say it openly, that where was God by Hitler? There's no God. Like, they say it. If when we may stand by demonstrations for Palestine, for the Palestinian people, people come over to us, Zionists, and they say, where was God by Hitler? You know, they don't even hear. Their ears don't hear what their mouths are saying. They should be embarrassed. I mean, of course we have to understand why God allowed it. But to say as if therefore there's no God, in other words, they're saying there's no God to protect. That God doesn't protect, God is powerless, God forbid. That's what they're saying. Zionism is built on blasphemy. That's what it's all about. But the next step is also, but they try to code it in Judaism. So they say, God gave us the land, it's our land. In truth, the basic is, as I say, it's built on blasphemy, but the second thing is, in the Torah, since the destruction of the temple, we were put under three oaths. The Jewish people, it's a King Solomon's prophecy. We're not with three oaths. We're forbidden to go up in mass. After the destruction of the temple, we were sent into exile by God because of our physical lacking. We're forbidden to return in mass in large numbers till when God will make this, what I said, you know, metaphysical change where all humanity will serve God. We're forbidden to rebel against any nation. We have to be loyal citizens in every country we're residing. And thirdly, we're forbidden to make any attempts to end exile. That's three oaths. And the Jews held this for over 2,000 years by the Inquisition. Jews, many times Jews were very rich. And they could have bought a piece of land, but they didn't, because the rabbis had written as many responses that said, have patience, God sees what's happening, but you cannot try to create your own state, not only in Palestine, anywhere. So we're forbidden to have a state. So when the Zionists came, and they said they're going to make the state, and they picked Palestine for the, for this rebellion against God, why did they pick Palestine? Because they should be able to wave the Bible and say, God gave it to us. So they're rebelling against God in the concept, because and not only that, but in the action of creating the state, it's clearly against the rules of the Torah. We're forbidden to go back en masse. We're forbidden to rebel against people. And the Palestinian people are people who are suffering here. So whatever they're doing is a rebellion against God. And the more the religious, the community, I was showing, and I left a book with Dima, we just had, Netanyahu was in Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago it was. We had 10,000 people in front of the White House. It was 108 degrees. People were fainting over there. We came up from New York. You could see the people. There's no way of refuting it. I want to know if anybody saw it in WABC, whatever it's called, CNN or whatever, or Fox News. Did anybody see it? Not one word about this. There was, you know what it means, over 10,000 people in front of the White House, Jewish, religious people, demonstrating against the state of Israel. Why wasn't this shown? Yeah, you can see, and this is a book that we constantly have, little books like this put out. You can see Jews being beaten and just unbelievably beaten in Jerusalem and throughout Palestine, occupied Palestine. And you can see demonstrations that we have going on in America. And it's not reported. Nothing of this is reported. Here, this is the big picture. You can see this is a beating of Jews now. This is the last 2 months or something. Jews are being beaten by the Zionist police. And this is what's happening in Palestine constantly. And the world is silent about it. They don't report it because the media... Yeah, thank you. Here, this is... This fellow is showing his hands are burnt. What happened was he would go to demonstrations and the Zionists would attack and he would grab hold of a pole and lock his hands and not the. They decided they're going to get this guy, so they ripped him away from the pole and they put it in burning tar, and they burnt his hands, whatever. And then they put him into a prison for over a week and his hands swelled up. I don't know if his arms are going to be able to get poisoned. And this was just now. He just got out of prison with his hands on. It's just unbelievable. This is what they're doing to the Jewish people, because we refuse to recognize the authority of the state of Israel. It's a rebellion, a clear rebellion against God. I've left here. It's called we put together again traditional documents. So you have the chief rabbi of Palestine. You see, the Zionists have a chief rabbi, a rabbinate, but this is all farce. We don't recognize them. There's no rabbinate. They have it, but it's not legitimate. It's just a farce. It's to give this window dressing that they're Jewish, they're holy, they're spiritual, they mean God and everything. But underlying, it's all just the Satan. There is a rabbinate. There's a chief rabbi. Today, in Jerusalem, the chief rabbi, there's a few pictures of him are by a demonstration that we have here. You'll be able to look at this book here, but you can see the chief... Here's the picture of them marching by a demonstration, the chief rabbi. But in 1947, a year prior to when the UN wanted to ratify the state of Israel, they sent a delegation to Palestine to ask the people of Palestine what they want. You know, British had a mandate, and British was very correct. So they sent a delegation. And of course, the Muslim community, I'm sure, didn't beg them to create a Jewish state, I'm pretty sure. And the Christian society, either not. But the interesting thing is that the Jewish community that was there for hundreds of years begged them that they don't want the Jewish state. I was here, last time I was here, my rabbi was still alive. I had a rabbi called Rabbi Leitner, of blessed memory. He was a student of the chief rabbi of Palestine, Rabbi Dushinsky. And he was in his 90s, maybe when he passed away now. And he remembers, and we have a tape, that he was the delegation of the United Nations came up to Palestine, and they went to the chief rabbi, and they asked what they want, if they wanted, and they begged them, and they delivered a message written, begging that we do not want a state of a Jewish state. And I have right here. This is the chief rabbi Yosef, and this, by the way, the rabbinate still exists for the God-fearing community. It's there. We just have a separate life than the, you know, these Zionists. And the Chief Rabbi Joseph Tschudyshinsky wrote to the United Nations, and I'm just going to read one line: "We furthermore wish to express our definite opposition to a Jewish state in any part of Palestine." This is declaration before the United Nations, July 16, 1947, 1 year before they made the state. A few months later, they heard that they're being ignored. The United Nations is going to create, ratify a Jewish state. So they sent another, November 1947. He writes to the Secretary General of the United Nations, was at that time a Lake Success. He wrote, "The Jewish Orthodox community, Eid HaChareinus of Jerusalem, comprising 60,000 souls," that was like the, you know, the center of the Jewish community, "objects to the plea of including Jerusalem in the Jewish state or its residents becoming automatically citizens of the Jewish state. Our community demands that Jerusalem be an international zone under your protection with full autonomy, its residents being free citizens of the international zone of Jerusalem. We beg of you not to take any action before reading our memorandum." Chief Rabbi Tschudyshinsky. In other words, he saw that they're not being listened. He said, "At least leave us Jerusalem. Kutz," he said, "leave it free. We were living with the Palestinian people. I could tell you so many stories of the kindness and the coexistence that the Jews were living with the Muslims in Jerusalem. We have people, thank God, still alive today who were in the 70s, and they remember how we loved each other, we coexisted, we helped each other, we lived together. But Zionism came along and they portray it that the Arabs hate the Jews and it's a danger. They make what's called fear-mongering. You know, so you go into a, he says, and it's illegal in the United States, if somebody goes to the theater and yells, fire, fire, right? People get killed because people start running to the doors and they come, it's panic. The Jews had just gone through Hitler, and they tell the people around the Jewish world, you know, these people are going to murder you, they're going to drive you into the sea. So you have to support the state, or else they're like the Nazis, the continuation of Nazis. And they showed pictures, you know, of a militant, a suicide bomber. And so what they're doing is they create the panic amongst the Jewish people and amongst the Christian society, that as if this is the portrayal of the cause. They don't write what happened before. Now again, we're not, of course, you know, in any way condoning or whatever the suicide bombs. But what was the cause? Is this an action or a reaction? This was brought about by this frustration about what you've seen, or what you haven't even begun to see, the oppression of the Palestinian people. And they make it as if these people became the enemies because we're Jews. I always give the example, you know, somebody goes to a house and he starts throwing stones at the house and he breaks the windows and the guy comes out and he says, "Hey, what are you doing?" He says, "Oh, you're an anti-Semite." You know, "What do you mean? I think you just broke his head." You know, that's what they, and then they come, you know, so people say, "Why do they hate us? And there's so much people, you know, there's so much land. What are they, why can't they let us have this people?" It's so illogical, these things. If you go into somebody's house, you take over somebody's house, and then you say, and then the guy comes back, the guy was on vacation, he comes back and he says, "Hey, you're in my house." He said, "How many children you have?" He said, "I have one child." "Look, you have a big mansion, 16 rooms. You have one child. I have six children. I need that. And you're so selfish. I'll give you two rooms. Aren't you happy? We're going to give you over the green line. We're going to give you over the partition from the after the Six-Day War. This peace. Why aren't you happy? What's going? What are you guys? You're selfish. And after all, it was ours. They had, of course, to have the deed. It was our land. But they're saying, you know, why? And the judge sits there and he says, "Yeah, we have to make sense. You have 10 children. He only has one." Which judge would say that? Which normal, you know, logical person? They've stolen the land from people. Or they say there's so much Arab land. What does that mean, there's so much Arab land? I said, come to the United States and take over a little town. Maybe Manhattan. Or something. You take a little town somewhere, there's a little area, and you say, and Chinese will come in and take over one little town. And they'll say, "Hey, what do you care? I mean, after all, there's so many towns. Why are you being so selfish? It's all ridiculous. Everybody laughs. It doesn't make sense. It's not a logical..." But that's exactly what's happening. And when you hear these arguments from the Zionists many times, they say, "Why do they have so much land? Why can't they go somewhere else? It's so stupid. It defies logic." And to repeat it is, but this is what's going on. These are the claims to the land, that they can take over the land from the Palestinian people. We went, thank God, as a delegation to Palestine. We went to Gaza. And we knew, actually, I knew beforehand what would happen with God's help. But the world... doesn't know it till today because they even ignore our trips. But we were embraced by the people of Gaza. We went with, we brought medical aid. We had a delegation of rabbis from around the world sent from Palestine. I have the letters, and we delivered to them a big declaration from Palestine. And we came from England and from Canada, the U.S., and we came with medical aid for the people of, I'm going to end soon, I know I've ran my time. We brought aid to them. We went to Turkey. I was supposed to be on the flotilla, by the way. I had a place on the Marmara ship. They had a place for me. But the rabbis didn't let me go from New York because the plan was that we knew that the Israelis are going to arrest them, you know, and then they're going to take the confiscate. The ships, it was more of a, you know, a statement to awaken the world. And every of the leading spokespeople against Zionism had very bad ends by the hands of the Zionists. I was showing the imam, the first, maybe the first famous martyr was a Jew. His name was Dr. Dahan. The British, when the Zionists came up to Palestine in the 1910s, in the beginning, when they started coming, the British insisted that all the religions have to be registered under the, let's say, the Muslims under the Waqf, I think it was, under the Waqf over there. And the Jews have to go to the Zionist organization to be registered. So the Zionists recognized Chaim Weizmann and all these Zionist leaders as the representation of Jews. And all of a sudden, the Jewish community in Palestine was thrown under the Zionists by the British. And we had to fight that. And the one who saved us from that decree was somebody called Dr. Dahan. The Zionists saw that he was a big danger to them, so they murdered him. They told him they're going to assassinate him, they assassinated him. And we have this, everyone who had, Rabbi Hirsch, who was the leading spokesperson and was, when the PLO was created, a member of the Jewish people became, went to the Palestinian the PLO and became friendly with them. His name was Rabbi Hirsch, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Hirsch. I'm sorry, not Rabbi Yisrael, Moshe Hirsch, his father today, he lived to 120. Here I have a picture of him. So Rabbi Hirsch President Arafat made him the representative of the Jews. And he would go to them every month. He would have to smuggle himself out to be able to get him to, because the Zionists didn't even let him go. He would have to. Anyways, some of the Zionists threw acid in his face, and he was blind in one eye. He was barely able to see from one eye for maybe 40 years like that. This fellow, Rabbi Moshe, he just passed away. He was an older man. He just passed away. So I'm saying, whoever got into Zionist contact, you know, not that we don't have the people in Palestine. There's hundreds of thousands of anti-Zionists there in Palestine. But if they would get directly arrested or under their hands, they were afraid. So I didn't go on that ship. But we did go afterwards, and we went to visit the flotilla, the people from the flotilla. We went to Ankara, and we embraced the people. They embraced us. And like I said, the ones who are knowledgeable, they said, we don't have against Jewish people. So the fact is, the world, unfortunately, looks at this as a religious conflict. This is part of the biggest part of the Nakba, the tragedy. Because not only are the Jews grateful to the Muslim people and the Muslim world, the Muslim countries for helping us, but now, unfortunately, it's looked at, you know, the Palestinians are suffering because they're looked at as enemies of the Jews. That's tragic. Our hearts cry for the people of Palestine. We in our communities, I mean, from Palestine, because I have many of our older rabbis are from Palestine, they remember when the invasion, what happened in Deir Yassin, and all these towns, the frustration, the emotions, and many moved away because of that, willfully. In other words, from the religious Jewish community, they moved to New York, created a very large anti-Zionist community. The biggest concentration of religious Jews is in Williamsburg, right across from Manhattan. And there's not one Israeli flag. They're all anti-Zionists. That was created by the chief rabbi of Palestine, not the one that I just showed you. He had passed away, and then somebody else became. His name was Rabbi Teitelbaum, of blessed memory. He moved to New York and recreated a very large community, and then he moved upstate in Kiryas Joel. It's called Cajun. It's on the map, next to Monroe, New York. This is both very strong anti-Zionists. This is the largest concentration of religious Jewry, and there's not one Israeli flag. They're all against the state, and they're all very religious. And wherever you go, the more the religious community, the more anti-Zionist. And we demonstrate. Our demonstrations are never seen. We pray to God. We have fast days. We fast just on the day of the creation of the Zionist state. We fast. We wear sackcloths. I can show you demonstrations. Our hearts go out to the Palestinian people for the suffering. And not only there. I mean, we have the people don't even know. Maybe you do know. I don't know. But they have refugee camps next to Iraq, other places that are not even just barely known about by people, that they're living in squalor, they're suffering. And a lot of this, I mean, you know, the first issue to change this is by praying to the Almighty, because the Almighty's hands is everything. So we pray constantly for the speedy and peaceful dismantlement of the state. God can make everything happen. USSR ended overnight peacefully. Nobody could have believed it. So, and people would have laughed at us if we would have said that Russia's gonna, USSR is going to end. A day before, if you could become we're not allowed to bet, but you could become a multimillionaire if you would have bet a day before the USSR is going to end. Because who would have believed it? And God made it. It's in God's hand. What people think are strong, it says, God forbid, if somebody passes away, we go to the house of the person, we say a piece of a psalm from King David. It says, if you see a strong tree, do not become like flustered by it. In other words, something that looks strong and etched in stone, like the Roman Empire, the Greek Empire, it ends. All this ends. It doesn't mean anything. USSR ended. God can make it end sometimes peacefully. It just, USSR ended. So we hope, and we urge everybody to pray for the speedy and peaceful dismantlement of the state. That's the first thing. But at the same time, you have to do. The Jewish saying is that there's certain times that you should steal. There's certain times you should not have belief in God or something. In other words, because when somebody comes to you and says to you, hey, you know, give charity, the guy can say he's very poor, he doesn't have a penny to his name. So you say, oh, have belief in God, God will help you. So he said, then don't talk about belief in God, then you give him charity, you're supposed to give him charity. It doesn't mean not have belief in God, but don't come along with, you know, teaching him about belief. First give him the charity that he needs. And they say the same thing. It says it's a mitzvah, it's a command, it's a good deed to harm this person. You know, sometimes somebody does something bad and these people get a fight. He says, why are you yelling at him? He says, well, it's a mitzvah, a good deed to do bad to this person. You know, in his mind, so all these things are the works of Satan. It turns it around. Just to say that we have to pray, you know, that God should dismantle the state of Israel and we hope speedily and peacefully is not enough. We have to go up and we have to do. We have to get out there and tell the world you're being conned. You're being fooled. The people in Gaza are suffering. If you don't see it with your own eyes, you don't see it, you know. When you saw these pictures, it's a lot worse. And, you know, you don't even want your children to see it. They have nightmares at night. And, you know, it hurts to see it, of course, oneself. But these people are suffering. They mentally also, you know, I mean, first of all, let's say what just happened in Gaza. Gaza, they have, you know, I have to tell you, over 1,400 people, I don't remember the exact number, were murdered. It's probably a lot more than that. And then you have the injured, over 5,000. When you say injured, injured doesn't mean that I got a cut, you know, you walk home and a few days later. When they say injured, God forbid, you know, there's people who are maimed, and, you know, and the whole life they walk around physically disabled, and it affects the whole family. How tragic is when you see somebody going with a wheelchair? How much does that hurt? You know, it gives you a pinch in the heart. People walking around, they're constantly, their whole lives are ruined. And mentally, you know how many people are psychologically, you know, damaged? What they see, what's happened to them. We have to do, we have to help, do, get up, you know. I mean, it's very hard, we're economically, but we have to both bring as much as one person can. At the same time, also stand up and tell the world, this is nothing to do with religion. This is a Zionist ploy. It's a Zionist farce. These people are doing evil. It has no legitimacy. The United Nations ratified something that was totally illegitimate, and we have to stand up and stand and do for them. Even after the flotilla, when the Zionists went in and they attacked the ship in international waters, it was international waters. And so then all of a sudden in the U.S. media, a lot of it was saying, oh, these people were terrorists, and they came armed. It's so ridiculous. They came armed, and they show you the arms that they had. They had pieces of boards from the ship or whatever, you know. You know, it's, and people buy it. People accept it. We have to do. We have to get up and do whatever we can. Like I say, you know, to speak and to convince and change the mind. And I'm going to end with this because it's so very late. In South Africa, I wasn't in South Africa, thank God. These are very nice communities. I don't know if you know Muslim and Arab communities in South Africa. I'm sure you do know. I was in a few places. We went to Durban. There was a big conference on for Palestine. And of course, there was the famous United Nations conference against xenophobia and racism. We went there, thank God, then, together with a Muslim group. By the way, the United Nations, we were an NGO and we couldn't get in to speak. We were constantly being thwarted. And then we were the Jewish groups. And what happened was we went through an Islamic Human Rights Commission from UK, and that's how we were able to get in, and we spoke by the United Nations conference there. Anyway, we went there at these museums of the racism that happened in the UK, in South Africa, the apartheid. Now, the apartheid people said that when that's going to end, there's going to be slaughter in the street. You know, that you can't stop it because they're going to... And not only that, but interesting, when you go to the museum, they have a museum for the apartheid. When you go there, there's a tape of like one of the leaders of the apartheid, a very bad memory of names, he was the prime minister or something, and there's a tape, like ongoing tape, and he's saying how the apartheid is good for the black people. He was explaining that it's good for the black people to have the apartheid. This was the mindset. So in the world, they believe that the Palestinians, it's also good, the situation, if they'll have a two-state, they'll have this, they'll have that, and they explain it away, and it's because the mindset of the world is set wrong. We have to do is get up there and change that. And they also said if it will end, there will be murder in the streets. Thank God, when it ended, the apartheid, there was no slaughtering in the streets. And what changed it? It wasn't the U.S. government. It wasn't the old government. The governments did business. The United Nations, again, which is I'm not trying to knock them, but the fact is it was united, only nations that are accepted. Palestine is not yet accepted. Only nations that were accepted were, looked at as, the Nazis weren't accepted. So after the Nazi period, of course, they made it, but they wouldn't accept a nation, something like the Nazis. They accepted distinguished, nations and so forth. They accepted South Africa was there, and the United States did business with them. And many other countries, they would have gone on the merry way. What stopped it? The grassroots. People got up there, and people on college campuses, they pushed the issue, and they kept on insisting, this is racism. You can't do this. And with God's help, of course, it's God's hand, but what the people did, and that started it, the grassroots changed what happened. We have, and they made the politicians uncomfortable. That's what we have to do. We have to get up there and have the politicians know, this is wrong. This is... it's wrong, it's atrocity, it's a Nakba. They can't do what you're doing to the people of Palestine. You must stop. They don't have proper food, they don't have proper anything, the housing and everything. I can go, the whole what's happening to them. We must stop that. And so that's what's required. And with God's help, and people of course will say you're anti-Semites, but with knowledge like I'm giving you, with God's help, it's only the beginning. You can look, you can study, you have our website, I've left on papers and stuff. And you can go follow it up so you can be confident, when they accuse you of being anti-Semitic, that you can be confident and say, excuse me, maybe you're ignorant of the Jewish religion, but I'm not, you can say. We know what's anti-Semitic. If anybody's an anti-Semite, it's the Zionists. They are the greatest factory of exacerbating anti-Semitism around the world. Around the world, people hate the Jews because of what they're doing. They're causing that. And for them, they want it because then the Jews say, oh, we have to have the State of Israel to protect us. It's like a mad cycle. So you can get up there and say, we know what anti-Semitism is. We know what it is. And first of all, of course, I'm going to end here right now. Semite is also, of course, Arab people are also, Semites. But that's not the point. What they call anti-Semitism. So you say, oh, we know it. You should be confident in knowing it's not anti-Semitism. On the contrary, with the dismantlement of the state, it will bring a fresh air of harmony. It will be able to coexist, that the world will not believe the change. So we have to work for that. And all together, to get up there, and that we should be able to let the world know that we have coexisted, and that we want to coexist again with God's help and freedom. And the day should come speedily. With his benevolence, with his compassion, he should make a speedy and peaceful dismantlement of the state. And the day should come, and soon in our days, the whole world should recognize and will recognize the one God, and we will all serve him in harmony. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum. And I apologize for being so long. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.